and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and I'm thrilled you decided to join us for another episode with another extraordinary mom. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the podcast. Let me tell you a little bit about us. Every week on the podcast, on Tuesdays, I bring you a different interview with a new mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons that they've learned along the way. And on Fridays, I bring you another episode where it's just me and I get to chat with you about anything that's been on my heart lately. So thanks for tuning in to our Tuesday episode. Today I'm going to talk with Jessica Olson. And Jessica is a listener who reached out to me and says, "Hey, I have a story that maybe would resonate with a lot of your listeners." And when she explained her journey of motherhood, I totally agreed. There's a lot of parts to Jessica's story of motherhood, but today we're going to focus mainly on her experience in the NICU. She had a challenging first pregnancy and was on bed rest for a majority of it, and then she went on to have twins and had some NICU experience there as well. She is an extraordinary mom who has overcome really extraordinary things, and the thing I love most about Jessica's story is that she's really turned something painful and difficult in her life, and she has chosen to turn this negative experience into something positive by giving back and creating an organization that helps and supports NICU moms by giving them a voice and giving them hope and sharing her story. So that's what we're going to focus upon today, and you're going to love Jessica. She is so wise and so encouraging that even through hard things, there can be good things that come in the end. So let's get to it today. All right. I'd like to welcome to the show Jessica Olson today. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. How are you?
I'm fabulous. When I was in elementary school, my three best friends were named Jessica. So how old are you?
I know. I was going to say I was born in 87.
Okay. So. I'm 84. So I think between like 83 and 88, like Jessica was the name.
It was the name.
So many Jessicas.
I feel the same way. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
In the
80s. I like the name Jessica. I'll take it.
Me too.
Well, I'm so excited to chat with you today. And where am I talking to you from?
I am in South Jordan, Utah.
Cool.
Where I live with my cute little family.
Awesome. That's great. Well, yeah. So you have been a listener of the podcast and you reached out to me saying, "Hey, I have a story that might be worth sharing." And there's so much to your story that I know that for various reasons, a lot of listeners will be able to connect with you in one way or another, whether it's the autism aspect or the parent of multiples aspect or just being a mom in general. I really think that you have a great story to tell, and I can't wait for the listeners to get to know you and your story today.
Thank you. I feel the same way. I just love connecting with other moms, and I think it's important to tell your story.
Yeah.
I think our stories are valid and they're helpful, and they matter to other people when we share them. So I love talking about all of these things. I'm excited.
Yeah, I totally agree. And everybody has a story. You know, you may not think like your story is anything special, but that's not true. And everybody's experience is important, and everybody's perspective and the way that they've navigated these treacherous waters at times. You know, it's just like we're all just doing the best we can, and we can learn so much from each other.
Absolutely. Yes. I totally agree.
That's awesome. Well, why don't you give the listeners a little background on yourself and then we'll jump right in.
Okay. I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. I was the only girl in a family of five siblings. I went to college at the University of Utah and I graduated with a degree in human development. And then I actually went and got a real estate license and began working in real estate, and that's where I met my husband. So he was a realtor and I was a real estate assistant, and we caught eyes across the real estate office one day, and honestly, the closest thing to love at first sight.
That is awesome.
We just fell in love really, really quickly.
I love those kinds of stories. When you know, you know.
Yeah, I remember looking at him and the thought came into my head when I saw him. I didn't even know what his name was, but I saw him and I just thought, he looks like my husband. That thought came into my head, just the way that he looked.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd known him forever. So we met both working at the same real estate firm, and then we got married, and we've been married for 10 years. We have four little kids and we live in South Jordan.
Awesome.
We're very busy. Yeah.
That's so great. Well, you are a busy lady. So let's start back at the beginning and try and go back to that time even before you had kids. Tell me about when you first wanted to grow your family and that experience becoming a mom for the first time.
Yeah, we had been married for almost 5 years when we decided to have a baby, and we were really ready. Mm-hmm. We were so excited. I was done with college. My husband had a great job, and we just felt like everything was going to go so smoothly and like we were ready to go.
Yeah.
So we got pregnant, and my pregnancy went really, really well for about the first 20 weeks. And then that's kind of when everything started to turn. I had a really good pregnancy in the beginning. I wasn't very sick. Was so, so excited. And then when I went to the gender ultrasound, when I was 20 weeks along, that's when we started to see some complications arise with my little baby. So everything kind of spiraled from that point on.
And what were the complications that they saw?
So I went into the ultrasound, and they started looking at the baby and checking all of her organs, and they noticed that she was measuring small. So I think she was maybe 3 or 4 weeks smaller than she should have been based on her age. And the doctor just kind of started to sigh and seemed concerned. And she just went on and said, I'm going to go ahead and measure the amniotic fluid surrounding this baby. And so she started measuring the fluid, and I could just see her face start to drop as she measured the pockets of fluid surrounding that baby. And she finished the ultrasound and said to me, you have very, very dismal, low levels of amniotic fluid surrounding this baby. And she's growth restricted. There's not enough space for her to move and to grow. And I don't know if they're going to need to take her out soon. I don't know if they're going to need to deliver you soon, but we need to get in touch with your doctor right away.
Wow.
So I was just terrified.
And this is your first experience, so you don't, you're just like blissfully unaware that anything would go wrong, and then suddenly, bam.
I was so naive to the thought of anything ever going wrong. I just, everything up into my, in my life up until that point had really been smooth sailing, and things, I had never really had a medical scare or anything serious happen with me personally or even with people that I loved. So it was a real shock. And I just remember leaving the ultrasound tech's office and getting in my car, and we started to drive home, and I just lost it. I mean, I was just terrified. So we got home, and my doctor called me and said, I just got the news from your ultrasound. And he said, I want you to go lay down on the couch, and I want you to lay down on your left side, because that is the position that you lay in if you want to give your baby the best blood flow, from what I can understand. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're just going to stay there. You just go lay down and don't move. And so that's what I did for the next 8 weeks until I ended up in the hospital.
Wow. And ordinarily, if someone were like, go take a break, go take a rest, I'd be like, thank you. Thanks for that permission. But when you are so stressed and so concerned and so helpless, that has got to be the worst feeling.
It was. It was so difficult. And I think especially because she was my first baby.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have anything to distract me, first of all.
Yeah.
I had just finished college. I was done with school. I wasn't working at the time. I didn't have any other kids. So I really was just in this situation where my whole life revolved around being on bed rest and trying to take care of my body and take care of this baby inside me. And it was really overwhelming. I think that it's a lot easier almost if you can have something to kind of distract your head.
Right.
But there were a lot of times when my mind would go to some really scary places.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's just endless.
There's too much time to just hyperanalyze everything and every little feeling, I'm sure, just like puts you on edge.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know anything about the condition. I didn't understand really It's hard to say when you have a baby that has low amniotic fluid. There are a lot of different outcomes that can come from that. Some of them can be really dismal. If a baby is growth restricted, it can affect their brain development. Sometimes they don't have enough fluid to move around in the way that they need to develop their body and their brain in the right way, or the umbilical cord can get cinched.
Oh, wow.
And that can cut off blood supply to the baby. Or there's some times where everything can be okay. So it just was very, I had no idea what to expect.
Right. So when did they finally deliver her?
So I was admitted to the hospital at 28 weeks and they delivered her at 37.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were they really impressed that you were able to go for that long?
You know what? Yes. When I
That's
got
amazing.
Admitted, yeah, it really was. When I got admitted at 28 weeks, they honestly almost delivered her that night. And I can remember them admitting me into the hospital and coming in to draw all this blood from me in case I should happen to need a blood transfusion, or there was all these tests they needed to do. And the on-call doctor at the hospital came to my room and he said, I am going to call your OB, but I think we might want to take this baby out tonight. Your levels are just so low. There's just no fluid in there. And I said, okay, well, let's call him. And the doctor walked out of the room and I just had like this wave of, I just knew that it was not the right thing, that it was not time for her to come out. And I knew that we could keep going. And so he came back in and he said, your OB's on the phone. He wants to talk to you. And so I got on the phone with my doctor and he was a kind enough man to at least ask me how I was feeling about it.
Yeah.
And that was the first time as a mother that I have leaned on my own intuition and trusted my own feelings. And I said to him, she's not coming out. This isn't the right thing. We don't deliver her tonight. Like let's do some of the other treatment methods. Let's get an IV in me. Let's pump me full of fluid. You know, I'm in the hospital now, so I can be on even stricter bed rest. And I just feel like we need to keep going. And he said, okay. So at that point, we really monitored her every single day. I did an NST, which is a non-stress test, where they put a heart rate monitor on your stomach that is monitoring the heart rate of your baby, and they watch for the baby's heart rate to climb up and then to fall back down. It's called accelerations and decelerations. Mm-hmm. And that tells them that the baby is moving and active and getting the right amount of blood supply. I had to do an NST every day, sometimes twice a day, and typically an ultrasound every day.
Wow.
And we just watched her like a hawk. And we pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And every week I would say to myself, this is the week that they're going to deliver her. And you have these milestones. 28 weeks is a big one. If you get to 28 weeks, then you kind of breathe a sigh of relief. And then 32 weeks, breathe a sigh of relief. And then I remember making it to 34 and feeling like, okay, I made it to 34. You know, she's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Making it to 37 was just a miracle.
Oh, that is amazing. Tell me about meeting her for the first time after all that stress and uncertainty, meeting her for the first time.
Oh, man. I mean, it was incredible. I think I felt so bonded to her already.
Mm-hmm. You like, we did this together.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, we did this together. And I can just remember so many nights in the hospital room, laying there, and I just had this very clear picture that it was me and her going through it. Because a lot of the time, you're all alone.
Yeah.
My husband would come, of course, but he had a job, and he needed to get back home, and we had a life that he needed to take care of. And so, you know, you're by yourself a lot of the time. And I think that really solidified this bond that I felt with that baby, because I would lay there and just think, it's you and me, and we're going to do it.
Yeah, and you did, and you did. And so her name is what?
Her name is Evie.
Evie, and did she have any health problems? What was that like?
She did not. She was really tiny. She was only 5 pounds, 15 ounces, but she was gorgeous and healthy, and she really amazed everybody after she was born, we thought for sure that there would be some sort of issue or that she would need some NICU time, but she didn't.
Wow.
And they actually even thought that they would find something wrong with the placenta that would explain what had happened, and we just never found anything. We had no idea why it had happened.
Were you worried for the next pregnancies that you were going to go on to have? Was that a concern since you'd had that experience?
Absolutely, yes. It was such a big concern, especially because my next pregnancy was a multiple. I had twins. Mm-hmm. And you're more likely to have low fluid again, and you're more likely to have low fluid when you're carrying two babies. So, yeah, I was very nervous that it would happen again. And it was I also was aware of the fact that it would be a different situation if I had to get put on bed rest again, because now I had a family to take care of and I had a baby at home who was still really a baby.
Right. So even while it was hard not having distractions that first time around, at least no one else was depending upon you. But, you know, heaven forbid you had to parent, you know, as well as be on bed rest. That's a lot.
Yeah, it would have been nearly impossible. And I know so many women do it and they're just amazing.
Yeah.
Because I could not have done anything besides focus on taking care of that baby and dealt with my own medical needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So after Evie was born, what were your favorite memories with her as a new mom? Was new motherhood what you thought it would be like? Tell me about those early days.
You know what? New motherhood, honestly, was amazing for me. And I feel kind of guilty saying that because
I need to feel guilty.
I know so many moms, it's such a challenge. I think that that was the only time in my motherhood journey that I just felt blissfully happy and unaware of all the things that can go wrong. I mean, I had just gone through this horrible situation of being in the hospital on bed rest, and being home felt like a miracle.
Yeah.
Cooking my own food felt like a miracle. My baby was sweet and happy, and she slept well, and I loved nursing, and it was really blissful. I loved being a mom to her.
Oh, that's the best. That's the best.
I know.
And you can be unapologetic about that, because, I mean, you definitely earned it with that pregnancy, for sure. But, I mean, yeah, you have the right to be able to enjoy, and even the babies that are harder. I mean, my first was really a difficult baby, but I didn't really fully realize how difficult it was in the moment. It's once you have a comparison that I'm like, oh, whoa, what was, like, now this is an easier baby. That was really hard. I knew it was hard at the time, but when you don't have a comparison, it's hard to quite know, like, which way is up, you know? And so
you just deal
with whatever you have.
And I think a lot of it for me was perspective.
Yeah.
I honestly can remember coming home from the hospital, and for probably 6 months, every day making my own lunch felt like a trip to Disneyland. Because when you're in the hospital, you're eating hospital food from the cafeteria, and it's gross, and it's not what you wanted. Things like that felt amazing to me. And I think I just had this perspective of, first of all, she lived.
Yeah.
I made it full term. She's healthy. And now I'm home. And so that was a really blissful time in my life.
Yeah. So then she turns one. And what did you find out?
So I found out that I was pregnant when she was 13 months old. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is I did not know I was carrying twins until I was 20 weeks along.
Okay. Is that common? I know every stomach grows at different rates and everything like that, but did you feel different? Like, by 20 weeks, were you enormous? Like, I don't know. How did you not know you were carrying twins?
Right? How did I not know I was carrying twins? There was, my OB never said anything. I think that when they listen for a heart rate and they hear one, they kind of just move on with the appointment.
Oh.
They don't really continue to search out and see if they can find another heart rate. And it kind of just depends on how you're carrying the babies, whether or not that would be obvious.
Okay.
Just from, you know.
Do twins run in your family?
So twins run in my husband's family rampant. But I hate to even say that because that really doesn't make a difference.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about fraternal twins, which is what mine are, it really is just about the woman ovulating two eggs and then both of them get fertilized.
So you were not expecting this?
Oh no, I had never even considered it. I had never considered it.
So your laying
thing was is I went on a trip to Russia when I was 18 weeks along with the twins with my husband. So we were over in Russia doing this trip that was really exhausting and taxing and walking a lot. And I can remember kind of feeling like, oh gosh, I'm really tired and my feet really hurt. And I know I've been pregnant before, but this is really exhausting. And there was one moment back in the hotel room where I was standing in front of a full length mirror looking at my stomach. And I did say to my husband, what if it's twins?
We all make that joke.
Yeah. I'm just like, I feel big. And I think I look big. And of course, what does he say? He says, well, if it were twins, we would know. Right, by now, you're 20 weeks along almost, and it's not twins, and it's your second pregnancy, so it's normal for you to feel like you're bigger.
Yeah.
So I went to the gender ultrasound and laid down on the table and thought that I was going to find out if I was having a boy or a girl, and all of a sudden, the ultrasound tech just said to me, so do twins run in your family? And I said, no. And then Greg goes, well, I'm a twin because my husband is a twin.
Okay.
And his dad actually has two sets of twin brothers. So twins in his family are very, very normal. But my first reaction was, no, they don't run in my family. And Greg just said, well, I'm a twin. And I was looking at my husband and I could see a light bulb turn on in his head, but it had not turned on for me. So I looked at him and then I looked at the ultrasound tech and I just said, wait a second, am I having twins? And she's like, yep, you're having twins. And we were shocked.
Wow.
The shock of a lifetime. I was halfway through my pregnancy already, and I had no idea.
Wow. So, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so I'm sure you were also nervous about the fluid and everything. So did everything check out okay with the twins?
Yeah. Somehow I ended up doing better with that pregnancy than I did with my first.
Wow.
Yeah, we made it to 36 and a half weeks, which with twins is great.
Absolutely.
And that's considered full term. I did not need to go on bed rest, which was a real blessing because I had Evie at home who was already kind of starting to show some delays in her development. She wasn't walking yet, so I was pregnant with twins and I had a baby who still needed to be carried everywhere, which was tough.
Wow.
But we really did not run into many complications with them at all. I was really, really lucky until the very, very end. And then I started to develop a little bit of toxemia. Mm-hmm. But at that point I was already 36 and a half weeks. And it was like, as soon as they caught it, they just delivered me the next day. So
wow. So what was it like going from one to three children? Boom.
Oh, so hard. So hard.
What was the hardest or a few of the hardest things? Because I know there's people listening who have kids close in age. Maybe it's not one to three, but, you know, going from one to two close in age is hard enough. Let's help the listeners not feel so alone.
Yeah, let's talk about it. I mean, when the twins were born, Evie was 19 months old and she wasn't walking. So I really had three babies all at once. And right after they were born, they went to the NICU. They needed a little bit of extra care just to eat and to grow. And then we finally took them home. And there was probably just about a week where I was kind of starting to adjust into life with three babies and figuring out how to make them all sort of nap at the same time, or at least attempt that.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to get enough sleep that I could function as a person. It was really hard. And then we ended up back at the hospital. So I don't think I really got the hang of three kids under the age of two until after we finished our second NICU stint with my baby, Nora.
So tell me why Nora had to go back to the hospital.
So we got home with Will and Nora, who are my twins. And we were home for maybe a week, and I went into Nora's room one day and changed her diaper, and I opened the diaper up, and all I saw was blood.
Oh, every parent's worst nightmare.
Really, it was horrifying. So there was blood in her stool, and I immediately went and called the on-call doctor, because this was evening, and I told her what was going on, And they said what doctors always say, which is watch it. Just watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be this, it could be that, it could be nothing. Keep a close eye on it. So I changed the diaper and moved on. And of course, as newborns do, a few hours later, there was another diaper. So I went to change that one. And that time I opened up the diaper and it was just, my heart just sunk. It was, the blood had increased. There was more of it. Oh. I just knew something was horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Again, your mother's intuition. I just knew it. And my husband said, well, let's call him back. And I said, no, we're going in. We're gonna go in.
Yeah.
So we found somebody to take care of Evie, who was at home, and baby Will, who was her twin brother. And we grabbed Nora and packed her a little bag, and we ran off to the InstaCare clinic down the street. So I can remember sitting in the room waiting to get back for that appointment. And I had been pumping at the time because I was having a hard time getting the hang of nursing two twins at the same time.
Imagine that.
Yeah, it's hard.
Oh, it's really my hard. Gosh, I can't imagine.
So I brought a bottle, and I sat in the waiting room and fed her a bottle while we waited to be seen. And that actually was the last time she drank any sort of milk for 14 days. So we went back to the appointment, and they looked her over, and Nora was really doing awesome. She had been growing well. She'd been eating well. She seemed really, really healthy.
And even though she looked healthy, they said this might be a thing called NEC, right?
Necrotizing enterocolitis, that this could be, but it's really, really unlikely that it will be that, because you usually only see NEC showing up in babies that are very, very premature.
Hmm.
And Nora was not that premature. She was almost 37 weeks. It's really uncommon in a baby at that gestation. But let's just get an X-ray to rule it out. So they said, we want you to go to the hospital, go to Primary Children's and get an X-ray. And let's just make sure it's not that, because that's really serious. So that's what we did. At that point, it was probably 10 or 11 at night. And we went to Primary Children's and did the X-ray for Nora. And then they took us to a waiting room, and I just had this little baby who was increasingly growing more and more hungry. And the first thing they said to me when I got to Primary Children's was, no matter what you do, you cannot feed her. If this is NEC, she cannot eat anything.
Oh my gosh.
Because the way that NEC works, I don't know, NEC is basically an infection in the bowels. And the more that those bowels move and the more that that baby eats and drinks and mm-hmm. food gets in there, the more irritated this sore will get.
Wow.
And if the sore and the infection get big enough, then you have risk for bowel perforation, which is when all that bad bacteria escapes the bowel and gets into the bloodstream. And that can really be life or death.
For a little baby. Teeny tiny baby, yeah.
It's a hard thing. If you have bowel perforation, I mean, it's like immediate surgery. It's very critical.
Wow.
So they said to me, you can't feed her. You need to just, no matter what you do, don't feed her. But I was waiting for that result to come in to find out if she even had it. And we probably waited for 3 hours with this little baby who just sat there and screamed and cried to eat. And I could not feed her. It was honestly probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yes, torture.
It's torture.
Oh.
She's only maybe 2 or 3 weeks old. I mean, she was tiny.
Yeah.
So finally they came in and they said, yes, this is NEC. And it's really crazy that she has it, because babies her age usually don't get it, but that's what she has. And from that moment on, it was just a whirlwind. They took us back to the NICU. They put us in an isolated room. They didn't want Nora to be around any of the other babies.
Mm.
They had to put in a PICC line. You know, it just was horrifying to have already gone through about a week and a half of the NICU with her and then take her home and feel like she's mine and I've got her, and then to take her back and watch them take off her clothes and put her back in, like, you know, hook her back up to all the monitors and take away all of the things that I had done that had kind of memorialized this thought of bringing this baby home, and now she's mine, and it was like giving her back. It was just,
yeah,
I was a mess.
Like, you'd already overcome the NICU. You'd already gone through that, and you were done with that chapter. Close it, move on to the next, and life at home. And then, darn it, you have to go back.
Yeah.
That going backwards feeling had to be really frustrating. And I know that there's NICU moms listening who are like, yep, been there. Like, you think you're on the road home and then a few steps back. I mean, I know that's a common experience.
And it's far more difficult to bring a baby to the NICU than to, at least for me, than to deliver one and have it just go straight to the NICU.
Yeah,
the thought of having her be home and then having to take her back was almost more than I could bear, as well as trying to wrap my head around the idea that she couldn't be fed.
Yes.
For a new mom who's just, you know, straight off of having a baby, you have all these hormones surging in your body, and everything in your body tells you to feed your baby.
Right.
It's instinctual.
Right.
And I couldn't do it. For the first couple of days that she was in the hospital, I wouldn't hold her because I was still lactating. I had another baby at home that I was feeding.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would hold that baby, she would root and cry. She could smell my breast milk. And it was excruciating.
That
I mean,
so sad. So how long was she in the NICU then?
So she did about, I think it was 14 days of bowel rest, where she just was hooked up to, she had an IV that pumped nutrients into her bloodstream that kept her alive, and that's it.
Wow.
And then after that was over, they do an x-ray to make sure that everything has healed the way that it's supposed to, and then you start slowly, slowly introducing milk back into their system, and then you do that for probably a week or so. So I think it was 3 or 4 weeks total.
Yeah.
But man, the hardest 3 or 4 weeks of my life, it was just excruciating.
Absolutely. I'm sure. And yeah. So then finally, once that was done and you were getting sent home, I'm sure you were like, please don't let us get back here again. Like, we've done this trip home and we do not want to come back.
Definitely. I have really mixed feelings towards the NICU, and I did end up going back, but for other moms, not for myself. And we'll talk more about that later, but it was a hard experience. You come away from the NICU feeling very, very grateful for the nurses and the doctors who took care of this baby, but definitely it's a trial and it's a tough thing to go through.
Yeah.
My heart really goes out to moms who have babies in the NICU.
Yeah. So this experience really, impacted your desire to have, you know, compassion and an impact on other NICU moms. Let's go ahead and talk about the organization that you started for helping NICU moms. Tell me about that organization that you started.
Yeah, Helping NICU Moms was just born one night out of an idea that I had late at night, right around Christmas time. And I just had finally gotten to a place where I wanted to give back. It took a little while before I could heal from what we went through with Nora.
Yeah.
But once I felt like I had healed, then the first thing I wanted to do was to help. And I wanted to find a way to connect with other moms. Because the thing about my story, especially when I was in the hospital on bed rest with Evie, is that that whole thing transpired during the holidays. So I was in the hospital during Christmas and I was in the hospital during New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that Christmas rolled around, I couldn't stop thinking about these moms in the hospital during the holidays like I was, and I just wanted to do something. So I texted my friend, Erin Kolliker, who has also had some amazing experiences in the NICU and has some amazing stories to tell that are hers to share. But I said to her, I have this idea. I want to do something for the moms at the hospital this year. And what do you think of this idea? And we just ran with it. We had a website up the very next day. We both love to write. So we put our heads together and kind of drafted an essay talking about what we'd experienced and what we were trying to do. And we ended up raising almost $4,000 in about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And we got all sorts of local businesses involved. We were able to get a lot of local bloggers involved, and we put together amazing care packages, Christmas presents for the moms in the NICU. We gave away Mama Roos, which are really amazing baby bouncers from Four Moms, like a big ticket item.
Yeah.
We did some stuff for the nurses. It was really, really incredible.
That is amazing. And that had to feel so good to take an experience that had been so painful and traumatizing for you and filled with, I mean, you know how these moms feel. Mm-hmm. And to turn it into something positive in your own life in hopes that it will also be positive for them, or at least offer a little bit of a glimmer of light, a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of support. I mean, that had to feel so good.
It did. It was healing. So therapeutic. Yeah. It was healing for both of us. And I remember Erin saying that as well, that it was really healing for her. And it was for me too. And it taught me a really big lesson about going through hard things, that if you can find a way to take that experience and learn something from it and then go out and act on it and do something to help somebody else, that it really just heals your soul.
Yeah.
That's what it did for me. And it also sparked in me a love of connecting with other women. And I love connecting with other women who have been through things that I've been through. I love having those heart-to-hearts and really talking about how difficult it is and really supporting each other in a real way.
Yeah, and being able to talk to somebody that's been there. Because as much as I can be a listener and try and be supportive and try to have compassion for them, without ever actually having been in that situation and knowing what it's like to watch them take your baby again from you, you know, like you said, like take off their clothes, hook them up to things. I mean, without ever actually having been through that, my depth of understanding can only go so deep. But for you to say, I get it, and to look in their eyes and give them a hug and say, we get it. We're here for you. What can we do? And to just say, there's hope. I took my baby home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And we did that for all of the moms with the baby in the NICU, and we also did it for all of the moms on bed rest.
I love that.
It was amazing. I mean, there's just nothing like being able to look at somebody who has been through what you've been through. And when you're in that situation, you look at them and you honestly think to yourself, oh my gosh, you survived.
Right.
You did it. Like, look at you. You're dressed. You're showered. You seem happy. You're okay. Wait, your baby's okay too?
Right.
I mean, that sounds silly to say, but when you're going through it, you think it's going to last forever.
Right.
You just do. You're in this mental state where it feels like it's going to go on forever. And seeing somebody who can hug you and say, it's not going to last forever, can really be life-changing.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure in the midst of it, you can't believe that there's going to be a light tomorrow. You know, like you just... Yeah, you can only see the dark around you and the uncertainty, but believing in somebody else's story that's been through it, I'm sure is extremely sustaining in those hardest days.
It's so helpful. And that it's really, when you ask what you can do to help, connecting with somebody who's experienced what you've experienced and letting them support you is probably the most helpful thing you can do.
Yeah,
and I think it's hard sometimes for some moms. You have to wait until you're ready to talk.
Right.
But once you're ready to talk, start talking as soon as you can, because that will heal you more than anything else can.
Absolutely. And so many times moms have a hard time asking and receiving help. But when you realize that there are moms and other people around you at the ready, if you just allow them that opportunity to serve, and it's mutually beneficial, you know? And so we have to be able to be a recipient at times in order to give other people the opportunity to serve.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's taking something that was difficult and making something beautiful come out of it.
I love that. I love that. I love that. So going through this journey of health scares and traumatic pregnancies and everything, how has this affected the way you view motherhood and the way that you view your children?
I mean, the way that I view my children is that it's a miracle to have a healthy baby, and it's a miracle to take that baby home and have things continue to go well. I say to Nora all the time, like, I love being your mom, and I'm so happy to be your mom. Yeah. And she has no idea what happened. She's only 3.5, but it's definitely made me more appreciative of her life.
Yeah.
I think it's changed my perspective on motherhood in some interesting ways. I just feel like my eyes are opened. And before all of this happened, you can sympathize with people, but you just don't get it, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I really see people, and I just feel like it opened my eyes to this whole other world of parenting and motherhood that can be full of a lot of heartache and a lot of grief. And that has been a really profound change. And it really has changed me in profound ways. It's changed my whole life, really. I'm grateful for definitely what it's done for me, because, like I said, I think it has opened my eyes.
Yeah.
And I think before I was a little bit naive to so much of what other people go through, mm-hmm. to bring babies to this world and to keep babies healthy and to get babies home. I'll be forever grateful for the understanding that I have and for the connections that I've made with other women. It's like it sparked a desire in me that I didn't have before to connect and to give back. That has changed my life and been one of the most beautiful parts of my life and something that I really cherish now.
So many times I talk to moms that have been through really hard things, and they would never, you know, pray for that experience or want that experience or want to go through it again or want that for their children. But, you know, we definitely pray to be better people, to have a more enlightened perspective, to be stronger. We pray for those attributes and that growth. But, you know, we're resistant to ever wanting to do anything hard to get us to that place. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're going to want to grow and progress and develop into the strongest person and the most impactful person, you know, in your sphere, I think we have to be ready for those hard things, as much as we may not want to ever go through that again, or, you know, we don't want to see anybody else hurt or go through that either. You can't have one without the other.
No, you can't. And I think that you go through it and then you realize that you're lucky. I mean, I really feel lucky for that. I've had some experience in my life that have opened my eyes to other people.
Yeah.
Because I see people differently now. Mm. And I'm inspired to find ways to connect and help other people now. And that's been a blessing for sure. It's something that really drives me now and motivates me.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. That's a beautiful aspect to your life now. So your organization, the Helping NICU Mamas, is that just a Christmas time thing, or has it expanded, or what's your vision for that?
It started out as just a Christmas thing. This year, it kind of expanded. I actually just took a Mamaroo to a family a couple weeks ago, and it's May now, mm-hmm. so we're still doing a little bit. We're just kind of trying to keep an eye out for those parents who are in situations where they need help and support, and rallying people to support them. Luckily, I have it set up now where I have amazing companies that love to support us, that we can kind of get in touch with them and say we have somebody who could use some extra love, and they're usually pretty wonderful about sending something. So I think in the future we'll probably do things year round if mm-hmm. we can manage it, but it definitely did start out just as a Christmas event. I think the bigger picture for that organization is just kind of trying to shed a light on these experiences that women go through and talking about these things. You know, let's talk about bed rest. Let's talk about complications. Let's talk about what it's like to have a baby in the NICU. Because when you're in there, it's so isolating. Mm-hmm. And then I also think a lot of times people come out and it's been so traumatic. I mean, there's a real sense of PTSD that some women can have and families can have.
Absolutely.
You're not always ready to talk about it. So if I can be somebody who is enough far removed from that experience that I'm okay talking about it, then I'm helping give a voice to people who are just a little bit too raw and fragile to open up right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that mission. I love that. So if people want to get in touch with you, or they want to contribute to the cause, where can they find you to get more information about your organization?
Everything that we do is really just on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So you can go to Instagram, and it's at Helping NICU Mamas. And We just wrapped up our project for 2015, but if you just want to follow that page and you can reach out to me, DM me if you want to be involved for next year, and I would love to have anyone on board who wants to participate. And the cool thing about this too is I know a lot of people who have taken this idea and run with it in other states. People are kind of catching fire and thinking that it's an amazing idea and doing it locally. And I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, can you help me set this up in my own state? Or how can we expand this and make it bigger? And I don't have the time or the capacity to turn it into something bigger, but I love that people are taking the idea and running with it wherever they live. And I love that it's just shedding a light on these women and sharing their stories and how amazing they are and how incredible these little babies are. They're such fighters.
Yeah, the moms and the babies are both warriors. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love how you're taking something that you're just passionate about. You know, this would not have been your cause 10 years ago, you know, but after going through this experience, now you're able to be a beacon of strength and light and hope for these moms. And, you know, anybody listening can do that in their own way. Whatever it is you've been through that's personal to you, that you've learned something, you've been through something, you've overcome, share that story, share that message, and think, you know, going back, what would I have needed? What support? What items? Whatever it is that would be helpful during that time, whether it's mental health, whether it's a NICU stay, whether it's cancer, whether it's any kind of, you know, struggle. When you're further down that road, go back and help those that are at the beginning of that journey and think, what would you have wanted? And be that to somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's such a gift. It's a gift to them, but it's such a gift to yourself. Mm-hmm. It makes everything that you've experienced worthwhile.
Yep.
And it allows you to connect with people on a bigger level. It allows you to see the world in a bigger way. I think it's the most important thing that I've learned.
Yeah.
Is that if you can take these hard experiences and find some way to connect with somebody else, some way to help somebody else, then it becomes this part of your life that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
And I never would have expected that when I was going through it.
And it doesn't have to be big ways. I mean, you don't have to be giving Mamaroos to the NICU moms. You can be giving, I mean, one time at church, I was working with the youth and we made bookmarks and snack packs and they put things in a Ziploc bag and we had a NICU nurse take it in and give it out to the moms just to say, hey, we're thinking of you. And here's a snack because you may not get to leave your baby's room today. You know, I mean, just those little things can make a huge impact.
Absolutely. And sharing your story if you're comfortable and ready to do it.
Absolutely.
Share your story.
Absolutely. Wow, you are so amazing. And there's a whole nother aspect to your motherhood journey. Your daughter was diagnosed with autism, Evie. So will you come back and talk to me about that experience as well? Because you're just so extraordinary, but I feel like that's just a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, I would love to come back and talk to you all about Evie and autism.
That's
sure.
Awesome. I would love that. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I hope that that really served as a beacon of hope and encouragement to the NICU moms out there or someone that might know someone in the NICU. Hopefully they have some new ideas of ways to support them. There is one final question I always ask to my guests, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Wow. I would tell my pre-motherhood self to lean in. Mm. Lean into the discomfort of motherhood. Let these hard things happen to you. Don't fight it. It's going to change you in ways that you didn't expect before. But if you'll just lean in and let motherhood change you, then it's going to be the best thing that ever happened to you.
That's a great ending. That's great. Jessica, you're amazing. You're an extraordinary mom.
Thank you so much.
I love your story.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I can't wait to have you back to talk about your sweet Evie.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Yay. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you found Jessica's story as inspirational as I did. Hey, I want to point you to the show notes today. You can find pictures of Jessica's family and her sweet Nora. Those will all be in the show notes section on extraordinarymomspodcast.com. And also, I'm including a video that first Christmas where they rolled out the red carpet for those moms and gave them gifts and stuff. They documented that with a really sweet video. So head on over to the website so that you can definitely check that out. I can't wait to talk to Jessica more about Evie's journey with autism and that experience. Isn't she amazing? So amazing what moms can do. Love meeting new moms who are just doing extraordinary things. So thanks for chatting with me, Jessica. And thank you for listening. As always, you can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3 and subscribe to the podcast. Go over to iTunes, click subscribe. You'll never miss an episode. I know you want to. Have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on Friday. Bye.